where the earth shows its bones of wind, broken stone, and the sea and the sky are warm. I'm caught out of time, my blood sings with wine, and I'm running naked in the sun. There's God in the trees, I'm weak in the knees, and the sky is a painful blue. I'd like to look around, but honey, all I see is you.
We were married, Ray and I, by an official in the town hall of Inuvik. It was a simple ceremony, but not less heartfelt for that. And besides its symbolic value, it also had one most important practical benefit, that of allowing Ray to stay in Canada. That summer and fall, we renovated my grandparents' old cabin, some distance north of Inuvik. It had stood empty for years, but it was sturdily built, and the timbers were sound. Nevertheless, there was a great deal of work to be done, if we were to live there year-round, and Ray insisted on some amenities that I might not have bothered with on my own. We spent that summer working hard, but I don't remember it as hard work. Rather, it was filled with a sense of common purpose that made the work seem easy. Ray would go bare-chested whenever the temperatures and mosquitoes allowed, his muscled chest distracting me from my work, until I had to push him up against the half-finished wall and kiss him, the smell of sweat and wood shavings filling my nostrils. Ray weathered the first winter with cheer. It felt as if we spent most of it in bed, in long, thorough sessions of lovemaking. At midwinter, I would wake in the sunless morning, when Ray still slept, and bring him awake by slow degrees, my hands on his soft belly, on the gentle rasp of his stubble, and on the curves of his thighs. Afterwards, we would sleep again, and wake once again to the soft blue twilight that suffused the world when the sun reached its invisible highest point below the horizon. We would watch it through the bedroom window, the abstract patterns of frost on the windowpane glowing with reflected light. One evening in late March, I came home from the detachment, tired and hungry from a long fruitless search for a missing dog owned by a tourist who could not conceive that we had other duties than finding her pet. "Hi, Fraze," Ray said. "Hi," I said, stripping off my layers of clothes. "Have you started dinner yet?" Ray turned, looking at me sharply. "Look, don't assume I'm going to do all the housework just because I don't have a job, okay?" I froze, feeling as if solid ice had suddenly turned out to be treacherous and thin. I retreated into formality, trying my best to not offend him. "I'm sorry if my question gave you that impression. That wasn't what I intended, and I certainly don't expect you to do more than your share of the housework." Ray's eyes were still narrowed, but he relaxed gradually. "Yeah, okay. I'll make dinner if you want," I said, still careful. "Just let me take my boots off." Ray smiled, his mood shifting. "Nah, we can do it together." We chopped carrots, potatoes, and onions side by side, our shoulders bumping. "Long day, huh?" Indeed, Tim and I spent most of it looking for a missing tourist dog. "And did you find it?" "Well, yes. We finally got a call from Julie Comex's kennel. The dog was hanging around one of her bitches, who was in heat." "I hope the tourist thanked you kindly." "Well, she seemed to take it as a due, although she was not as happy with Julie's comments about the stature of her dog and the probability of him being able to even reach up to mate with a husky." I suppressed a smile. "What, it was a lap dog?" "Yes, quite. I'm surprised it survived the cold." Diefenbaker woofed, indicating that he agreed with his assessment. Ray laughed, but despite the ease of our conversation now, I still felt wary. Had I, in fact, assumed that Ray should cook for me? It was difficult now to remember exactly how I had acted. In June, Eric Kittikmeo came to visit. I hadn't seen him since we met in Chicago, over the matter of the Chichimian masks, and I looked forward to meeting him without the tension of possibly conflicting duties and interests. I slipped from the bed early in the morning, shaking Ray's shoulder lightly. "Ray, I'm going fishing with Eric. Do you want to come along?" Ray stirred and pulled off the mask that let him sleep undisturbed by the light. He blinked at me. "Huh? The old friend I told you about. We are going fishing. Do you want to come?" Ray made a sleepy sound and shook his head. I kissed him on the temple and tucked the blankets back around him, feeling tenderness and a vague guilt that had correctly anticipated his desire to stay at home, since I was looking forward to going out on my own. "I'll be back before lunch." I dressed and made myself a couple of sandwiches, and then Deep and I slipped out of the door and into the early summer morning. At the river, I searched out a spot that was neither too wet nor too snarled with willow bushes and alders. It was too early in the year for mosquitoes, and I rolled up my sleeves and got out my fishing gear, a simple pole with a line and a hook at the end. Eric would find me. 10 minutes later, he did. "Ben," he nodded at me and sat down beside me. "Eric," he looked much as he had done in Chicago, except here he wasn't out of his element. Neither of us were. Eric took out his fishing gear before speaking. "So, you moved back?" "I did, yes." "And?" Eric glanced at the gold wedding ring on my finger. I tried not to smile. "You clearly know all about it already." "Perhaps." News traveled fast, after all, and it had been almost a year since Ray and I had married. I told him anyway. "Ray is my old partner from Chicago. You met my first Ray when you were down there. This is my second Ray." Eric raised his eyebrows at this. "It's a long story. I watched the float on my fishing line, bobbing in the water. Actually pulling up a fish was not the main reason I was here, but it wouldn't do to let one go to waste." We sat companionably for a while, saying nothing. Then Eric asked, "You've been rebuilding the old cabin?" "Yes, it feels good to return." Eric nodded, acknowledging but not expecting more, and into that silence I felt I could say something of what was weighing on my mind. "But Ray, I'm not sure he... it's not his home." "These things can take time." "I suppose so. And small towns?" Eric nodded again. The wind ruffled the surface of the water and shook the willows, and we lapsed into silence again. It was a relief to have talked it out with someone else, even as I felt slightly guilty at talking about Ray behind his back. One morning, my cell phone rang early in the morning, earlier than I would ordinarily expect anyone to call. "Benton Fraser speaking," I said, taking the cell phone issued to me by the detachment and going out into the kitchen so that I wouldn't disturb Ray's sleep. "It's Maggie. Listen, I got a call from Bill up in Took." "Has something happened?" I asked, instantly awake. Deve perked up his ears in the corner. "Yes, he says there's a plane that went down, probably crashing somewhere west of Took. Some fishermen saw it and reported it in. The flight wasn't registered with the airstrip, and they have no idea who it was." "Right," I said. Ray came out into the kitchen, rubbing his eyes sleepily. "Something going on?" he asked. I put my index finger on my lips, indicating silence, while Maggie told me that the pilot would be ready in an hour to take us both up to Took to investigate. "You leaving?" Ray asked after I hung up. "Yes," I said, explaining what had happened, while I went into the bedroom to pull on clothes and pack my gear. "I don't know when I'll be back, hopefully tomorrow, but I can't guarantee anything." Ray gripped my arm. "Hey, Maggie's got your back, right?" "Yes." "Wish I could go with you." "So do I, but I'm afraid the regulations won't allow it." Ray's grip tightened, then he stepped back. "Right, sure, take care of yourself." "I will." I hugged him, hard but brief, and left with Steve on my heels. I got home on the evening of the third day after I left. I opened the door, stepping in. Ray, sitting curled up in the armchair in front of the fireplace, stood up quickly. He came up to me, gripping me hard by the biceps. "Where have you been?" "I've been on a case, with Maggie. You know that." "Yeah, but that was almost 4 days ago. I didn't know if you were alive or dead." Ray looked angry, his fists clenched, his mouth set. "One of the suspects was injured. It took us some time to hike to Took. Could you maybe have taken the time to let me know this a little earlier? You know, it only takes a second to be polite." I bit my lip, hearing the words I had so often said myself thrown back at me. Our cell phones ran out of battery power. Even if they hadn't, there's almost no coverage up there. "Yeah, and what about when you got into Took?" I stared at him. There were indeed telephones at Took, and I could hardly deny that. I was very tired and wished I could just go to bed and sleep for a day and a night. "Yes, I suppose I ought to have called." I knelt down to untie my boots.
"You suppose? Really?"
I glanced up and saw Ray turn around and walk away. He stood by the window, looking out. I think I get how Stella felt now, when I was undercover, I mean. His voice was low, but still tense. I felt a twinge of guilt. I wasn't used to thinking of Ray this way, as someone who needed this kind of consideration. He'd been my partner, and we had gone into danger together. Now he was a different kind of partner, and we couldn't share that anymore. Ray's clothes looked rumpled, as if he'd been wearing them for days. "Have you been here all alone all the time? You haven't gone into town?" "Went in for some groceries. But it's not like I really know anyone there, except for Maggie anyway." He shrugged, looking away from me. I didn't know what to say, and the guilt tugged at me harder, making me queasy. He had come here for my sake. I had never offered to stay in Chicago, where we both had friends and both had jobs. But the fact was, I hadn't wanted to stay in Chicago. I had wanted to go back where I belonged. "He offered to come here," a tiny voice said, a selfish little voice. "You didn't ask him to." I pushed it down, ashamed. "Ray, I'm sorry. I should have called you." It felt inadequate.
"Yeah, you should have."
We stood silent, looking out at the lush green of the birches in the midnight sun. I don't think either of us really saw them. One evening in late July, the sun was slanting in warm and golden through the windows. If not for the swarms of mosquitoes, I would have liked to sit outside, but as it was, we kept the doors and windows shut. It should, I suppose, have been a domestic, idyllic scene. Domestic it might be, but it was far from idyllic. Ray and I had quarreled earlier that day over something as ridiculous as who had misplaced the axe. It had turned up later behind the woodshed, but that wasn't really the point. It wasn't the first time lately that we had quarreled over something that was, frankly speaking, irrelevant to the issue at hand. I felt a little like I had done before the case of the Henry Allen, when we had talked at cross purposes until we had come to blows. It was disheartening to realize that we still could not manage to communicate better than that. Of course, the problem was perhaps not one that could be solved by talking. Ray had given up his whole life to come to Canada and live with me. But I wasn't enough. How could one person ever be everything to another? Certainly I couldn't. Ray was washing the dishes, his back to me, and I got out my guitar. The clatter of dishes mingled with the notes, which were slightly off-key at first, but then slid up to perfect harmony as I tuned the strings. I picked out a chord idly, shifted it into another, then a third, as I searched for a tune to play. Words surfaced in my mind, and I let my fingers pick out the tune.
Thank you.
where the earth shows its bones of wind, broken stone, and the sea and the sky are warm. I'm caught out of time, my blood sings with wine.
Stan Rogers, 45 years. I didn't think Ray would recognize the tune. Smiling wryly, I continued to play, but didn't sing the words. Although Ray was my husband, apparently I still could not sing out loud that I wanted to grow old with him. I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now. I looked at Ray over the counter, his bare arms and the nape of his neck as he bent his head down. The tune slowed, and I let it slide into another song instead. Ray finished and dried his hands perfunctorily on a dishcloth. His hands were still damp as he came over to me and put his hand on my shoulder, as if in an apology for the earlier quarrel. Sing for me? I did. It was just an old lullaby and revealed nothing. When I lapsed into silence, I looked up at Ray. He looked determined. We need to talk. Those four quiet words terrified me. So this was how it would end. I can't do this, he would say. I can't live here. It's not my home. And he would leave me. All right, I said. I can't do this, Ray said.
So alone in the lights on stage every night, I've been reaching out to find a friend who knows all the words, sings so she's heard, and knows how all the stories end. Maybe after the show she'll ask me to go home with her for a drink or two. Now her smile lights her eyes, but honey, all I see is you. And I just want to hold you closer than I've ever held anyone before. You say you've been twice a wife and you're through with life. Oh, but honey, what the hell's it for? After 23 years, you'd think I could find a way to let you know somehow. But I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now. Yes, I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now.
The Work of Coming Home by Luzula, written for the Due South, Canadian 6 Degrees Big Bang, 2010.